Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Murder in the North. I'm Kelby.
And I'm Zach. And this week, we actually have a suggested case. This case was suggested to us by one of our listeners, Kyle. Thanks, Kyle, for the suggestion.
Yeah, this is our first case we've ever done that's been suggested by a listener. And if you would like for us to cover a certain case in the future, you can go to our Instagram at Murder in the North Podcast and suggest it there.
So our sources this week are Cinemaholic, The LA Times, Courthouse News, Morbidology, Ottawa Sun, The Toronto Sun, and a YouTube channel called True Crimes Daily. So our episode this week is on Blake Leibel. Blake Leibel was born in Toronto, Ontario on May 8, 1981 to Eleanor and Lauren Leibel. Lauren Leibel was known as a real estate tycoon in the Toronto area. He also made a good chunk of his money in between the 80s to the 90s, working for one of the biggest Canadian development companies. Cody Blake's brother reported that they actually had built over 40,000 homes. Before Lauren was in the real estate business, he was an Olympic athlete in the 1976 Olympics and competed in sailing but came in seventh. I've seen a report that he was actually the first Canadian to fail a drug test, testing positive. It's a long name, so just give me a second.
Sound it out.
Phenylpropanolamine. I'm not even going to try anymore. This is normally used for humans to help fight congestion related to allergies. So it's not really like a performance enhancing drugs, but when you actually are going to the Olympics, if you're sick or on any type of like medication, it actually has to be approved by the Olympic Committee.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So with Blake's dad having a lot of money, Blake grew up with a lot of money, but all of it wasn't actually from his dad, as Eleanor actually grew up with a father who owned a plastic sheets company that's now known as Polly Tarps Products Limited, and it is still running until this day. Blake grew up as a rich kid. He and his brother moved to LA alongside of some of their friends from other rich families in Toronto in 2004. Fast forwarding 2 years, Blake would meet Amanda Braun, a former model from San Luis Obispo, California. I'm probably not saying that right, but it is what it is. They would date until 2011 when they would get married, and during this time, Amanda was pregnant with their first baby boy. During this time, Blake would begin working on an animated TV series called Spaceballs, which was based on the 1987 film by Mel Brooks, and would also collaborate on a graphic novel named Syndrome. Everything seemed to be going so good until his mother passed in 2011. When Blake's mom passed, he received most of his mom's estates, including her $5.5 million home in Toronto.
Sheesh.
Oh yeah, they had money. And all of her other assets that he got as well were also worth millions more.
Wow.
Yeah, so he got quite a bit of the money.
Side note, are you familiar with any of like the novels or things that he wrote? Or the animated movies? Were you familiar with that? Because I'm not.
I've heard of Spaceballs, like the movie, but I've never heard of the TV series that he did. I never heard of the graphic novels either.
I was just wondering.
With all that being said, he wouldn't actually attend his mother's funeral and would actually sue to try and get her will overturned.
Oh my god.
Yes.
I wonder what happened.
So, this is actually because after his mother passed away, he had no income. So I actually found reports stating that he was actually had a monthly allowance of $18,000 a month.
A month. $18,000?
Yes. Over the 7 years that he was in, altogether the 7 years that he was in LA, it was up to $1.8 million.
Dear Lord.
And as you probably guessed it, he would lose the lawsuit and would be later sued himself by his lawyers. Any guesses why?
I'm not sure.
Because he couldn't pay them.
Oh my god.
He was sued for $400,000.
What the heck did this guy do? Like,
so out of everything that I've read about him, I wasn't able to actually find where all of his income was going. But I did see reports that his brother was an avid gambler and was actually a part of like a kind of a gambling thing called Molly's Game.
Like the movie.
There you go. So I don't know if Blake was also in this because I didn't see any report saying that, but he definitely could have been, but I'm not going to say that he was.
I mean, I'm just thinking of all the things I could buy for $18,000 a month. So I'd be a lot happier, that's for sure.
With his brother was actually at one point the youngest owner of a Ferrari Enzo.
Sheesh.
At 23 years old.
Try not to compare myself.
How old are we?
We're 23.
And it's we're fine. Making it's... podcasts in our room.
For the people.
So, Blake's attitude over the next 4 years would actually start to grow increasingly erotic and often paranoid. And former collaborators also would say that he would frequently miss meetings and became obsessed with the themes of violence and brutality.
Oh, here we go.
So this would continue on until 2015, when he would actually file for divorce with Amanda, who was actually 8 months pregnant with their second child. And around the same time, Blake would cut off the majority of his Toronto circle, but some thought it was just more due to the recent divorce, as his attitude matched someone who had a traumatic breakup. During the time that he filed for the divorce was the same time he actually got a new girl pregnant. This girl being Ayanna Cassian.
This man. This man.
Ayanna was from Kyiv, Ukraine, and had moved to LA on a student visa to become a model. Within the first year that they were together, Ayanna got pregnant, they moved in together, and were engaged.
I mean, good for them.
Oh yeah, they moved pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
They don't let anything hold them back. Amanda would later find out about the pregnancy after she actually ran into Blake on the street, and they kind of just got to talking, and would later say that it was almost like he had a midlife crisis. He left and abandoned one family to get with another woman and get her pregnant. But on May 3rd, 2016, Ayanna would have birth to her and Blake's first daughter together. But 17 days later, Los Angeles police from Wilshire Division, south of Leibel's West Hollywood home, arrested him on suspicion of sexual assault of a mistress.
Of a mistress?
So, with Ayanna, he actually had somebody else on the side. Mm-hmm.
Jeez.
He would spend 15 hours in the system that day, according to jail records, before posting his $100,000 bail. Ayanna would find out about the arrest and would later leave and move out of the apartment that they shared and would move in with her mother, Olga. But 4 days later, Blake reached out to Ayanna to say that he was sorry and he couldn't live without her.
Classic.
So Ayanna agreed to meet with him for a short visit, but wouldn't return. Olga would later feel that something was not right and would go to Blake's house and start banging on the door and yelling, but nobody answered the door. But around 1 a.m., Ayanna's sister would receive a call from Ayanna's phone, but missed it. She would call back, but nobody answered. The next day, Olga would go back to Blake's apartment with the LAPD, but again, there was no answer. Olga wanted the police to enter, but Deputy Rodriguez said that it wasn't even a day that she'd been missing yet. This was 24 hours after Ayanna had left, and she was gone the whole time from her new baby. And, like, her mother knew that she wouldn't go that long without kind of seeing her child.
Yeah, like, things aren't adding up, clearly.
And especially, she's with somebody who is the main suspect in a sexual assault case.
Right. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah. So, she went back to the police the next day. And at this time, they went into the apartment by forcing the door open. This is when they found a makeshift barricade of bedding and furniture, and behind was an uncooperative Blake, who was refusing to leave. Police began to look around the apartment and would have to force their way into the kitchen to make their way back to the bedroom where they would find Ayanna. And I'm going to take a quick pause here just for a quick trigger warning, just because with what kind of happens here, just to kind of provide some detail, it does get a little gruesome. They found her body cut up, showing signs of torture, and would later come out that Blake had tortured and mutilated Ayanna with a knife before killing her and draining her blood.
Oh my god. That's awful.
Yeah.
That is... Oh, I can't even...
Like, I was at a loss for words when I was finding some of this.
It surprises me how people are just capable of doing that. It's...
Yeah. Oh. So police would actually find Ayanna's phone. It had 100 calls, 37 text messages, and 16 chats, and just 20 of those calls were from Olga. This would lead Blake to be charged with murder, aggravated mayhem, torture, as well as assault with intent to commit a felony. The trial would begin around June 11th, 2018. I couldn't find the exact date, but like I was finding reports on the 11th, which was actually a Monday, saying it would continue on a Tuesday. And Blake would actually plead not guilty to all the charges. But on June 26th, he'd be found guilty on 3 charges and would face a life sentence in prison on all 3 accounts. He would face a life in prison with no possibility of parole on all 3 counts.
Why only 3?
So... I was actually just about to get to that. The assault charge was dismissed. The assault charge was dismissed at the outset of a trial, and the prosecution elected not to proceed on that count. But this wasn't the only punishment, as the judge actually ordered him to pay Ayanna's family $41.6 million.
For like what he did?
For what he did.
Did he pay?
I hope so, but I wasn't able to find any reports stating that he did.
I've never heard about that before.
Mm-hmm. So, while I was kind of looking into the case, I actually found an interview. This interview was on the True Crime Daily YouTube channel, and was with somebody that they kept anonymous because they wanted to protect themselves and their reputation within kind of the industry. So, while watching the interview, he would actually say that people came up to him saying, "You need to meet Blake. He's crazy and unbelievable." He would talk about how Blake would just kind of say things that just gave him the chills. And in one particular case, he would actually interrupt a conversation at a pool party, like a nice kind of cocktail party that's in Hollywood, to talk about sexual deprivation, which is describing an intense sexual arousing fantasy.
This guy's creepy.
Yeah, that's not something really you ever share with anyone, let alone at a pool party in Hollywood.
Yeah, obviously there's something underlying.
So he would later actually say he suspected that he had a house somewhere that everybody knew of, but also had a house somewhere else that nobody knew of with a woman tied up in it. Little did they know, that was almost the same case as Ayanna. And when the interviewer actually asked him, "So what was your reaction when everything came out?" And he said, and sorry for the language, "No shit." It was almost as if it all made sense and just clicked in his head.
Oh my god.
Because of how, I don't want to say crazy, but how intense some of the things that he would say around him were. So throughout all of this, I can't help but feel bad for Olga, as she knew that something was wrong, and within those 2 days, if something was done, Ayanna unfortunately could have been alive.
Yeah, or what about the phone call the sister got?
Yeah.
I'm sure that sister holds that burden.
Seriously. And within everything, Olga had to sit through all of the trial and see all of the pictures, to hear of all of the stuff that was done to her.
That is just unimaginable. I can't even imagine that.
And in one of the articles, it actually says that one of the officers, before everything started, warned Olga, but she couldn't leave. And I know that there was supposed to be that pay forward from Blake to Olga, but none of the money that was paid definitely would bring back what happened.
Yeah.
And all of the trauma that the trial must have brought. So throughout this, we do want to keep Ayana as well as Olga in our mind throughout everything that they've been through.
Yeah, their whole family.
Yeah.
It's just, it's so sad. We see this in a lot of cases where they, like, the first 24 hours are just so critical. And a lot of times it may not be taken as serious as it should be.
Yep.
And I don't want to sit here and feel like I'm blaming the police, but, you know, maybe had they taken Olga more serious,
mm-hmm.
who knows?
Yeah.
We don't know, but something could have maybe happened that could be different today.
So I think I did actually end up seeing an article that actually stated that Olga's actually raising their daughter, and I think they're actually back in Kyiv now.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I think probably one of the saddest parts about this is because of, like, how everything kind of took place, that she was gone for about 2 days, that nobody's seen or heard from her, they really don't know the date of death. Because with all the torture and the mutilation that happened, they weren't really able to kind of pinpoint a date on it.
I don't even know what to say to that.
Yeah, it was... I'm not going to lie, this was definitely one of the harder cases to kind of look at and research because of everything that he did. And there was even things in here that I chose not to put in. But
so is he being held in, like, LA?
So I don't know for sure. They never actually specified of where he's being held.
Okay.
All I know is that he ended up getting the 3 life sentences with no possibility of parole.
Right. Okay.
But then again, they could have moved him to a max security prison somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just curious to see where he might have been.
Yeah, but that is the end of our episode for the week. Thank you everyone who has gotten to this point of listening. We'll be back next week for Kelby's episode.
We also wanted to apologize for the delay in this week's episode. We were having some audio issues, so we're taking our time because, as I'm sure you can imagine, anything revolving tech is not fun. So, with that being said, thanks again, Kyle, for suggesting this week's case. And if you would like for us to cover a specific case, you can follow our Instagram at Murder in the North Podcast, or if you have any comments or questions about any of the cases we have covered. And we also have a TikTok.
The TikTok is also Murder in the North Podcast, and we're going to be posting clips of each episode on there, so you can kind of get a quick glimpse of everything on there as well.
We truly appreciate all of the support, and we would love if you'd be able to give our podcast a review and even share it with some other true crime fans. But we will see you all next Tuesday. Stay safe.